Everybody, and welcome to the PC Gamer Show. My name is Tom Marks, host and assistant editor here at PC Gamer, and I'm here with James Davenport, associate editor.
Hey.
You still going for the ASMR thing there, James?
Yeah.
And of course, Wesley Fenlon, our hardware editor.
Hello.
Welcome back, Wes.
Thank you. I haven't been gone that long.
But I feel like it's been a while since you've been on the show.
It's been a hot minute.
Yeah. I have been in Georgia.
Yes.
Georgia.
Which we will get to. We've got a great show for you today, as always. We'll be talking about Wes's trip to Georgia, and not just to visit family. He was at Hi-Rez Studios for a bit.
Mm.
We'll be talking about Rainbow Six Siege, which James is in the middle of reviewing.
Yep.
The fantastic return of Cat Fantastic, where we will finally be back with the quiz show. I'm really excited about that. We got a good one today. And then we're going to be discussing console to PC streaming, which is, you know, you can play Xbox One on your PC. And frankly, I don't understand why. And Wes is going to enlighten us on that one.
And also PS4 now.
Yes, and now PS4. And then we'll also be discussing Just Cause 3, which is jumping off of our discussion last week about open world games and that sort of thing. And then we'll be taking your questions from Twitch chat. But first, let's start off with what have we been playing lately? James, what have you been playing this week? What'd you play over Thanksgiving break?
Oh, boy. Well, I played Turn 26. I got a year older and sadder. I also played Freedom, which is what you do after you're done with Fallout. It was nice. I had spare time. I, like, cooked a meal. I walked around.
Sounds like you're really taking advantage of this Turn 26 thing you're doing.
Yeah. No, but I also played some games. I played I've been meaning to play it for a long time. It's Soma Frictional Studios, their latest horror adventure. And it's great. I powered through the whole thing in a day or so.
They were working on that for a good 3 years after Amnesia. Like, it was, I think it was a while.
Yeah.
That game is really, really good. If anything, if I complain about one thing, it's that I think they maybe feel a bit too tied to their, like, monster roaming the hallways, stealth around it formula, because it's this amazing science fiction, bottom of the ocean adventure that has to do with the nature of humanity, and it asks a lot of big questions, and it really made me think. And the most horrifying elements of that game are, like, what it makes you consider about yourself and people you know, and, you know, the future of humanity. And it also makes you go wander a decrepit underwater station full of horrors, which is, you know, it's creepy too. But really, really beautiful game, awesome ending, awesome story. I think everyone should play it. Even if you're scared of – if you want to turn the monsters off, they have a Steam Workshop add-on that lets you just, like, make the monsters wander around if you want to do that.
And then you're just, like, playing Dear Esther or something?
Essentially. And I think, like, that's fine. I think more people should play this. Don't get turned off by the horror. The horror is, like – or, excuse me, the monsters are the worst part of the game and the most unnecessary part of the game. So don't feel bad if you just turn those off. Check it out, though. It's really good.
Can you turn them off? You can, like, there's, like, an option?
Yeah,
for that?
Soma has Steam Workshop support.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's just basically ease of access for mods. And
So that's a fan mod that someone created. That wasn't, like, an official.
No. Yeah. It was a fan mod. There's a picture of a kitten on it, and it says wuss mode. Whatever. It's fine. I stealthed it like a tough guy, but I kind of almost wish I had turned it off so I could explore more.
So you were more into the psychological thriller part.
Yeah. It has a lot to do. The basic premise is you're underwater at this on this space station where there's people studying the nature of humanity and kind of, like, future-proofing the human race in interesting ways. And so you stumble across, without spoiling too much, you stumble across robots in this station that think they're human. And you enter conversations with them, and you can do nothing to convince them otherwise. You're like, no, you're a robot. I'm looking at you. And perception and who you are. It gets trippy, man.
Did you ever play the Talos Principle?
Oh, I love the Talos Principle.
I'm getting vibes of that.
Yeah, it's like that. A lot dark. Yeah, it's Talos Principle minus a bit of the heavy-handed philosophy, or plus a little bit more blood. I mean, it's
nothing in Talos Principle was heavy-handed.
No, none of it.
So it sounds like Ex Machina, the film from this year, a little bit.
You know. Maybe? It goes, similar vibes.
This is terrible. You're telling us about how much you love this game, and all we're doing is so it's just this, but...
It's like this other thing.
I mean, okay, to be fair, it's not like the most... science fiction has been here and done this before, but I think it's a game hasn't done it in this way, in such a beautiful, like, horrifying underwater environment. I think it's better than Rapture in some parts. From BioShock, if you ask me, so.
That's a lofty claim.
Yeah.
But I love Rapture, so that makes me want to.
Yeah, I think it's if you like Rapture, you might like Exploring this kind of game. So
cool. Well, what about you, Wes?
I haven't really gotten to play too many games recently because I've been out traveling for the past couple weeks. I was in Georgia. I was at Hi-Rez Studios, so I'll talk more about that in a bit. But one of the things I did there was play a little bit of Smite's. New Joust map. So Smite, if you're not familiar, it's a MOBA, much in the vein of Dota or League of Legends, except it is set in a behind-the-back kind of action game-y third-person camera instead of top-down. And most of the abilities in the game are skill shots. You have to aim all your basic attacks. You have to aim most of your abilities. So it's unfair to say that it's harder than League or Dota because there are layers of complexity to those games, and Smite is certainly nowhere near as complex as Dota. But just like the basic landing your shots element is much more like an action game than it is a typical MOBA. And Joust is their 3v3 mode, and they're working on a new map for it that's styled after Journey to the West, which is a classic Chinese fable. It's set in like the Sky Palace, and it has all this really ornate, cool Chinese architecture, and kind of the jungle feels very, I guess, you know, classical. It feels like classical Chinese art, kind of cool, like flowing waterfalls in the background and pretty clouds and stuff. And the new map is a lot more, it's more nuanced than the old one was. The old Joust map, I was never really a fan of it. It had one just straight lane and a jungle that kind of encircled it around the outside. But the jungle had very limited entrances. So you would get in these situations where if you were running down the jungle, you were kind of just going down this funnel pathway. You were never moving in and out of the lane that much the way you would be in like a larger 5-on-5 map. So I got to play that new map, and it's still unfinished. They're still working on the art, and they don't have all of the like the animations for the jungle mobs, the NPCs and stuff in there. But the layout, I think, is probably finalized or close to finalized, and I liked it a lot. You know, I only played like two matches on it. Hard to say how that sustains to, you know, hundreds of hours of gameplay. But it was really fun. You could do a lot more kind of playful ganks on people or losing people in the jungle by taking different paths. They limited the number of power-up buffs that were in the jungle. The old Joust map just had too many. It had, like, I think 6 total. So, like, everybody in the game could have a buff. And that kind of limited that just meant everyone should have a buff always. And that limited the number of times you're actually fighting over those buffs. And that's more limited now. I think there are only 3 on the new map, plus kind of a mini boss style buff like the dragon on the League of Legends map or something like that, the Gold Fury on the full size Smite map. So that is that was a fun map. That was fun to play. And I got to play a little bit of Paladins as well, which Tom and I played together before I left on my trip. And I think you talked about it on the podcast last week and weeks ago.
Yeah, I was not so hot on it, but now we can
I wasn't
about
either.
It.
Yeah. But I talked to their lead designer, who actually used to be a caster for Smite Games, was a community member, hired as a caster, worked his way up into design. And he had a lot of interesting things to say about the game. I brought up some of the things that I thought were problematic about it. For example, one of your big complaints was it's a game about customizing your character through cards. You create a deck, but that feature is not in the beta yet. And you're like, why would you launch this beta without this kind of pivotal feature? And he had a really immediate response to that, which was, we want to see how all the cards perform and what people pick when they don't have their specific deck, because we want to see how they're balanced, what works well, what synergizes with what cards we need to, you know, rework, et cetera. So that was a pretty good reason.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And talked a lot about that game, so I'm going to have an interview up on the site at some point pretty soon. And didn't convince me that some of my issues with Paladins, like the just like the feedback of the guns, I'm not sure that is ever going to get kind of to the point where I would want it for an FPS. But I think a lot of the problems that we noticed with like the game mode feeling very repetitive and kind of limited, I think that stuff is probably going to get a lot better, because they were already talking about just like completely changing things just to see how they work. Like at some point they were testing out a thing that it may not even ever make it into the game, but they were trying out when you get to like a control point, having all of the walls around it shift into a different configuration. So every time you got there, it would be potentially a different defensive situation.
Huh.
So like
that's interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And who knows what that game's going to shape up like over the next 6 months, a year, however long they're kind of iterating on it.
Right.
But I'm optimistic that it will be a better game than it launched as.
Yeah, I'm optimistic too that it just kind of has to find both. It needs to find who it's marketing towards, and then that audience needs to find it. But I'm optimistic that could happen. We can talk more about Paladins in just a moment and your whole trip to Hi-Rez. But I did want to talk a little bit about what I was playing, because, of course, I've been playing Overwatch. Like I said last week, I kind of always play Overwatch, and I don't want to talk about that because nobody else can play Overwatch, and it's just me pestering you with things that you can't play. But I appreciate that half-hearted knock. Come on there, James. That was nice. But what I really enjoyed playing this weekend over Thanksgiving break, when all my friends and family were in town, was we played a ton of couch co-op games that I just missed playing, right? So we played mainly Towerfall, Gang Beasts, and Monaco. And I forgot how much fun those games are with four people sitting on a couch and like five people around you just watching. They just take on this life of their own where they're just ridiculous and fun, and it's really an experience that you can't like find anywhere else. You can't find in another type of game.
You can find it on the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, that's true.
Sadly, yeah. Like there have been kind of an amazing number of great couch co-op games coming out on the PC over the past couple of years. I actually wrote a thing about it, primarily about Video Ball, which still isn't out. Come on, Tim Rogers. Finish that shit already. Put it out.
Was that the game where he tweeted that you had to, in order to like review it, you had to prove that you had four controllers and four people in order to like, or
I think
else
he did tweet that, yeah.
He wouldn't give you a copy.
Yeah, and he said he was serious. Who knows if he was serious?
It makes sense. It's the type of game where you should play with four people.
It really is a thing that, you know, a game like Gang Beasts, I don't remember if it has online play in it right now.
I don't think so.
Probably doesn't. But even if it did, it would be a quarter of the experience that it is, you know, together.
Oh, yeah.
And we play that when we were live streaming a few months ago
with
six or people? I think we had more than four, right?
I think we had seven.
Yeah. And the fact that you can do that, that's something that is really great for the PC, that you can kind of have like a mishmash of controllers potentially, you know, like, oh, we've got a few wireless 360 controllers on a dongle, and we've got a couple wired ones, and we've got a couple Xbox One controllers, and, you know, maybe a DualShock or something, just like all just connected up together. Somebody's on a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
And that's a lot harder to get together on a console, with the exception of like anybody who owned Super Smash Brothers for the past 10 years probably still has some Wavebirds in their closet. When I moved to the West Coast, I did not bring any of my Nintendo consoles or anything with me. Brought my Wavebirds because I knew one day I would want them.
Priorities,
and
man.
Now I can use them on the PC with the GameCube to Wii adapter, because somebody hacked the USB driver and wrote a driver for it. So,
which is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
But that actually kind of happened. So for ours, we were using two PS3 controllers emulated as 360 controllers and then two Mad Catz 360 controllers with wired cables.
You love those Mad Catz controllers.
Yeah, what's
wrong? I don't know what's wrong with you.
So they're way overpriced, I think. They're like $80 per controller or something. It might be less than that, but
the whole point of third-party controllers is they're cheaper.
Right.
What are you doing?
So the controller, it feels basically exactly like a 360 controller, right? But you can take out the sticks and the D-pad and you can swap them around. So if you wanted the D-pad on the right and two sticks on the left for no reason, you could do that. But really what it means is if you prefer inline or offset joysticks, choose.
That's cool.
Then you can also customize the color of it, but that's totally irrelevant to any human being who isn't like super vain and doesn't have money to spend like me. But then you can also adjust the weight in it, how heavy the controller is. And so it just ends up being just a really nice 360 controller, like a really, really high quality one. And I love them, but I mean, I think it's called the Xbox 360 Pro Controller or something like that. But they don't even want PC gamers to use them, basically. They only market it towards Xbox, and so they're not thinking of it as a PC thing. I think it's because I had some driver problems with it or something like that, but it was easy enough to sort out. I'm not sure what the logic is there. But a similar thing, and this isn't PC, but a similar thing happened with when we were playing Smash Bros. Over the weekend with my family, which was we had three Wavebirds, one old ghetto third-party controller, one 3DS, two 3DSs, and then two Pro controllers. So it was a similar thing where you can only find that type of couch co-op experience, like you said, on PC or Nintendo console or the Wii U. And it's kind of funny that those are the two places for it. But I guess it makes sense because the PC is all about adaptability and being able to play the way you want.
If you didn't play any Lethal League over the weekend, you should definitely grab that.
Get it.
I don't know if the Steam sale – is Steam sale still going on or that, did
Might
that
be
end?
One more day.
I think it's like one more day. I might be wrong about
Lethal
that.
Lethal League was on sale for I think $5 during the sale, and if it still is, anybody who has the luxury of having friends who can come over and you have enough controllers to do couch co-op stuff on PC, get Lethal League. It's a really fun kind of like hybrid of fighting games and Pong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, and
it's
you can play it free for all, you can play it with teams, and you're just bouncing this ball around like crazy. And when you get better at it, you can kind of do some trick shots. You can lob it up in the air and then hit it again at a higher speed. You can try to bounce it off the wall or hit it straight at people. Every character has a little special move that does something different. It's really fun. The soundtrack is awesome. And it's really just like fast-paced, frenetic game.
We're being corrected in chat. The Steam sale is over.
One more recommendation for couch co-op is Sports Friends. I totally forgot to say this in my now playing, but do you guys know Sports Friends?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Johann Sebastian Joust.
That's exactly. We played this weekend. I came home and my roommates were playing some games, and we just put on Johann Sebastian Joust, and it was just three of us, but we just were like kids. Running around the basement living room and trying to hit each other.
But Joust is the one that's not available in the PC version of the game, I believe.
What?
Is
it really?
Is it not?
I think it is. It totally is.
I can double check this right now while you guys talk about what it is specifically.
Because Move controllers work with laptops, or excuse me, a computer.
They're Bluetooth, I think.
Bluetooth, so.
It has some other really fun games as well.
Yeah, it's forgetting the names, but it's got a pole vaulting game where two pole vaulters on a 2D plane are running at each other and you're trying to get this ball on a string above you.
Yeah, that was a blast.
Each other's goals.
And there's
so
also
clumsy.
What, Mount Your Friends or Super Mount Your Friends or something? Is that in?
That's not in the collection,
that's not
but
in the
Mount
collection.
Your Friends is also
another
necessary.
Good one.
Joust is only – the Johann Sebastian Joust mode of Sports Friend is only for Mac and Linux. It's not available on Windows.
Oh, that's so weird.
For it's like a driver thing.
Probably.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you have Mac or Linux computers, do it.
Yeah, you can get the DualShock 4 – and the DualShock 3 controllers to work on PC, but you have to kind of hide it to use a driver to emulate it as an Xbox controller. But I'm pretty sure on a Mac you can just like Bluetooth connect to it and or plug
easy.
It in and it just works.
It's actually the same way with PlayStation 4 just DualShock controllers. They just connect via Bluetooth. Like I thought it was going to be a whole deal because my brother just has a Mac. He doesn't have a PC and he has a PS4 and he was like, "How do I connect it?" And I started to Google it just to help him out and it. It's literally the instructions are plug in your controller, you're done. Like that's it. So it's kind of frustrating that this stuff is so much more difficult on Windows.
Yeah, you know, it'd be interesting if the use case for Steam machines ends up being purely or primarily as a couch co-op device.
I wouldn't mind that.
You have the openness of Linux where potentially you can make it so that any device easily works with the system. A lot of the couch co-op games we play are from smaller developers, from indie devs. They make their games in Unity a lot of the times. Unity games almost always are cross-platform, Windows, PC, Mac, because it's pretty easy to do through Unity. And Steam machines already are launching at fairly low prices, and give it a little more time, and you could easily play a lot of these games on pretty weak hardware. Like, yeah. Towerfall is not an especially demanding game.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can play those kind of games on probably a $250 PC. Yep. And that's not a bad thing to have in your living room for parties.
One more shout out that I've seen come up in chat now twice, and we did play this weekend, was also Duck Game, which we played.
Oh, it's so
Duck
fun.
We played in that big co-op party. Just spam the B button and quack like crazy. I love it because it's basically Towerfall, but ridiculous and with ducks and guns instead of bows.
Definitely
and
doesn't have kind of the precision and like.
No, it's sillier Towerfall.
Nuance of Towerfall, yeah. But it's the. It's the what was the Dreamcast brawler? I'm blanking. Power Stone.
I have never heard of that.
Duck Game is Power Stone to Towerfall's Smash Bros.
I'll have to take your word for that on that one. But
it's a great old school Capcom 3D brawler.
That's cool.
It's basically 3D Smash Bros. With lots of goofy items. Yeah,
I'll have to look that up.
It's a good game.
Well, let's move on and go back to talking about your trip to Hi-Rez.
So going in all kinds of directions.
Oh, yes. Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
I guess I went over a lot of it. So I was there primarily for Smite's regional championship.
Right.
So the way they've structured their esports seasons, season two of Smite, starting back in March or so, is they've done these what they call splits, I believe. So they'll do kind of they did like a spring season, summer season, fall season, and there'll be a number of kind of tournament kind of setups, mostly just played online, you know, not like big stadium events or anything, with a bunch of teams from the EU side, the North American side, and they'll play against each other, kind of develop a standing within that part of the year, and then go to a slightly bigger event. By the end of the fall split, they had kind of the rankings for all the teams determined, and the ones that performed the best got to come to the regional finals, and the teams that were there and won will be going to the World Championship in January. So I was there. They were playing games for like five, spread across 5 days, because they had a number of American teams, a number of EU teams competing.
That's a lot of video games.
Yeah. It's a lot of video games. And they, you know, they kind of had it split up so that European viewers could watch the European games. So those games would start at like 8 or 9 a.m. East Coast time, so that people in Europe could watch the games. And then the North American games were usually starting a bit later in the day. None of the days were too long. You know, I don't think any of them lasted longer than 8 hours, but that's still a lot of games. And it's interesting to see how the players perform at a LAN event where they're with their team locally, you know, sitting in a, you know, at a row of computers versus playing online. And the casters talk a lot about how different it is performing under the pressure of that situation, and how some teams really come together and excel, and other teams kind of, you know, they get the pressure gets to them, and they start making mistakes they wouldn't normally make.
And the crowd can have a big effect too. I keep forgetting who said this quote, and I might have brought it up on the show, but there was a League of Legends player who was asked, how much does home favorite, you know, and a crowd cheering for you really matter in a game? And he said that it's about a level advantage. If you have a crowd cheering for you and every time you get a kill they go crazy, it's basically worth the same as if you were up a level on the enemy team. Because just it invigorates you. It makes you feel good. It makes you want to keep playing well.
So this event was interesting in that it wasn't a a tournament in the sense that they actually had a crowd and a stadium and everything. It was at, just at Hi-Rez's offices.
Oh, wow.
So there are a lot of players, all the players who were in the, you know, the event were obviously there, and they were watching, and they did have kind of a viewer room set up, and so there was some screaming and whatnot, and like I was sitting in a press room for a good chunk of it watching the stream, so we were about 10-15 seconds behind, so we would start hearing the crowd start screaming, and we'd hear them through a few walls, you know, and we'd be like, oh, time to pay attention. Something good is about to happen. But yeah, one of the players I talked to, I kind of asked him, like, what's different playing in this setting versus playing online? And he didn't really talk about the crowd because there wasn't one at the point, obviously. But he said they have to play with earbuds in underneath their headset, just to muffle as much outside noise as possible. Mm. And he finds earbuds really, really uncomfortable. So that bothered him a lot over the course of playing games for, you know, 4 hours or so, 3 hours. He didn't like that. So that was, you know, that maybe not enough to say that it threw off his game, but it certainly didn't help.
I mean, live events, it's funny because we love watching live events, and I love watching live competitive gaming. I think it brings such an energy to the event that you can't get anywhere else, and it does change, like we've been saying, it changes what the players do, but also it just makes everything worse in terms of production, and or not worse, but more difficult, I guess, is the better way of putting it. For example, I was at IAM San Jose a couple weeks ago, and there was an issue, which, for the record, was a great event, a lot of fun, really well done. But there was an issue at the beginning of the first day where the Counter-Strike players, they weren't in soundproof booths, and the Counter-Strike players could hear the commentators, you know? And then they managed to fix it, and they put more headset stuff on, but it was still so loud, they could barely hear footsteps of you know, coming around the corner, which in Counter-Strike is a big deal.
It's kind of important, yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting to me that we push for live events so much, but they also just make things so difficult for the actual gameplay.
Well, I mean, it's what you expect out of competitive anything, right? Yeah. Anything considered a sport. Like, who would want to watch football if it was just played in an aircraft hangar, like, just completely blocked off from society? Like, it's a fundamentally different game at that point without just the setting and the crowd and and all that. So, yeah, it was interesting to go to this event and see kind of what was on the line and the way it was an experience for the players and the way the presentation worked from a live stream perspective, even though there wasn't a crowd there. And it definitely didn't have the same level of energy that a show in a big arena with thousands of fans have. But the players did, you know, they were playing together, and you could kind of see the differences in the teamwork between the teams, which was really cool. And occasionally they would do like a listen in on the teams, so you'd get to hear them talking to each other during a match. And it'd be interesting. Some teams, you just, even if they were speaking English, you could barely understand what they were saying in hectic team fights. And then other teams, very, very clear communication on who they're targeting, who, you know, whose abilities are on cooldown, what they're doing. So that was a cool experience. So yeah, that was kind of the main thing from the trip, was just watching a lot of Smite. I wrote up a story of like some of the best plays from the event. It's easy to forget watching that game how hard it is to play compared to how it is to watch it, because they have a really good spectator cam that hovers kind of above the battlefield in the perspective you get when you're playing Dota or League of Legends. And only occasionally will they go in to the third-person view that you actually have when you're playing. And so you'll see players jump over walls to chase somebody down and kill them, or make a skill shot from, you know, through a wall with a, you know, a beam or something, or juke someone who's chasing them or something like that. And all of those things are done just based on instinct and practice and skill, because you can't see that. You know, if someone is behind you in Smite, you can't see them. You can only see what is in front of you, what your third-person perspective is giving you. So a lot of those moves are way more impressive if you can keep in your head, like, okay, this person just did these three amazing things without being able to see any, you know, anything going on in this fight except for abilities popping off and that kind of thing. I also talked to them about tribes a little bit.
Yeah, please talk to us about tribes.
So I'll definitely write up the whole interview when I get a chance. I talked to the guy who's kind of in charge of bringing tribes back for a good 20 minutes or so. Most of the conversation was about how much they screwed it up and how they knew, you know, what went wrong with it, and they didn't feel good about it. And they're going to try to fix as much of that as they can to kind of just get it to a place where the hardcore community for the game cares about it. And when I say hardcore, I don't necessarily mean they're trying to not to just make the game playable by people who are really, really good at tribes. They want to make it something that hopefully a few more people will come back to and play. They don't have any, you know, aspirations of it becoming this giant competitive game that's going to compete with Overwatch or something, you know, so or CSGO.
They're right. Trying to do right by the mistake they feel they made.
Absolutely. Gotcha. That's their goal with it. And they a lot of the design changes they're making are coming from community feedback. And one of the interesting things he said is that a lot of the things that the very, very skilled players and, you know, very, very big tribes, you know, tribes fans for years, most of the changes that they wanted and were requesting for the game actually make it a little bit more approachable for new players. And part of that is because they're going to be kind of crunching the class system down to three classes instead of like nine the way it is now. You're just going to have light, medium, heavy, and then you can kind of customize within that. They're taking out a bunch of weapons that they admitted, like, we put these in because when we put in new weapons that people could buy, we saw an uptick in players, and so we thought this is good. And it turned out, no, they were just dumping tons of stuff into the game that hurt it long term. So they're taking out a lot of weapons, kind of simplifying the loadout a little bit. So that'll make it a bit easier for new players. There just won't be as much stuff, kind of. They're going to hopefully do some UI tweaks and stuff when they get a chance. So I don't know exactly when the patch they're working on will hit the live version, because they've been doing various versions of the patch that have hit the public test server for a while. So, yeah, I think, you know, I want to go back in and play it a little bit. I never got into tribes. Kind of the older games were before my time as a FPS player. And then the new high-res one I just never got into. So I'm curious to see what the community thinks of it when it finally comes out. I think a lot of the people who stuck with the game will be very happy. I don't know if new people will be interested in playing it, but I think it'll be a better game after they're done working on it.
Yeah, and it's just encouraging that they are going back, yeah. And they've realized, they've very, very openly, too, been like, you know what, this was a mistake we made.
Yeah.
We're not, and like you said, I heard the exact same thing when I was at TwitchCon talking to the president of Hi-Rez, where he was just saying, we don't ever think we'll make money off of Ascend. We just want to fix it, basically, which it's nice. You know, it doesn't necessarily forgive or make, like, what's the word? What is the word I'm looking for?
Excuse?
Yes, thank you. It doesn't necessarily excuse what they did to the game initially, but it is very nice that they're admitting their mistake and going back and trying to fix it.
I think a lot of people at Hi-Rez felt that way, because the designer who's kind of in charge of it, and he had worked on it back in the day as like an art lead, he said that about maybe 6 months ago or something, at some point they had a meeting, you know, company meeting, where they had some new announcements about, you know, state of the company, what they were working on, that kind of thing. Probably, you know, talked about Paladins or something. But he said of several announcements they had that day, one of the announcements was, hey, we're going to go back to tribes and do some of the tribes. And he said that that got by far the biggest response and round of applause from the company of anything they talked about that day. So
cool.
I think a lot of people there really cared about tribes and they wanted it to be, you know, better and more successful than it was. And so I think they're, you know, they're going to do the best they can within reason of not just dumping, you know, tons and tons of money into it, but try to make it right.
Well, that's great to hear. And it sounds like it was a pretty cool trip that we can expect a little bit more out of on the site. So if you're interested in hearing more about Wes's trip, go to PCGamer.com and you'll see more about it there. Once again, if you are just joining us, you are watching the PC Gamer Show. But we're going to move on now and talk about Rainbow Six Siege. James, you've been playing a lot of Rainbow Six. You went to a review event a while back. You put out your review in progress, which I will post in the Twitch chat right now, and you can find on PCGamer.com as well. What do you think of it so far, I guess? I haven't played since the open alpha or open beta a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, I like it a lot. I really, 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 really like it.
How are the rainbows?
The rainbows, they're about a 6 yeah. out of 10. Get it?
Are there rainbows?
Maybe. In a bit.
You don't even know?
Have you unlocked the rainbows yet? That's the question.
There's rainbow credits, right? Or something like that?
Oh, one thing at a time.
All right. Start at the beginning.
Well, for those who don't know, Rainbow Six Siege is not necessarily like Rainbow Six games of yore. Its primary mode is a 5-on-5 competitive mode where one team is kind of defending some kind of objective, whether it's a hostage or a bomb or I forgot what the other one is, space in. But you're defending an objective in like a house or some kind of building. They're all fairly domestic and...
Or airplane.
Or an airplane, which I love that level. It's very long and narrow. There are 20 different operators, 10 on each side, 10 attackers, 10 defenders, and they each have their own kind of specialties.
Now, it's 5v5, but there are 10 choices, right?
Excuse me, for each side, yeah. So in that way, it's kind of got a shades of a character action game, you know, like you're seeing with a lot of shooters now. So you might have a guy called, they have such bad names.
Chief.
Yeah, they're all like blunt syllables that basically say what they do.
Maverick.
Yeah.
Sledge isn't like the sledgehammer guy, Sledge.
Yeah, there's a guy named Sledge who has a sledgehammer. His thing is that he can just bust down a breakable surface in like one hit, whereas if you don't have a sledgehammer, it might take you like a bunch of melee attacks, depending on the surface, or like shotgun several times to the wall. This guy can just go boom, and it's open.
That's like some Dirty Bomb level lazy naming right there.
Is there like a dude named Blast?
There's not quite.
My name is C4.
But Cat Fantastic might benefit from looking at those names someday in the future.
We already did a Cat Fantastic about if you could identify Dirty Bomb names or Rocket League cars.
So basically the point is like you set up base or you try and defend an area and some guy can like maybe put up strengthened walls. Some person can like traps around doorways. And you kind of put your abilities together to hopefully make some kind of plan and predict where maybe the attacking team is going to come from. The attacking team in the initial stage sends in drones, these tiny little like two-wheeled RC drones that they can navigate the building with and kind of scope out maybe what's going on with the defenses or find the objective. Which
basically
is really
every
important.
Kid's dream. At the age of 12.
It's probably one of my favorite parts of the game because,
it was right? one of my favorite parts when I played the beta.
It's a very Home Alone thing, you know, like you're kind of peeking on the bad guys and like you're seeing what they're up to and trying to outsmart them ahead of time. It's a lot of fun. And it's really annoying when you're on defense because you can see them and you can destroy these drones, but they're so tiny and small that often, like as a drone, you just like end up harassing the team, and they just end up shooting their own like trap or something stupid. So you scope them out, and then from that point, there's like you attack, and the game. It's one of those games like Evolve or like Left 4 Dead that will it can totally collapse or be incredible depending on who you play with. And it's hard to fault Rainbow Six for that one way or the other. I think it does enough to encourage teamwork, and it does a lot to, you know, get people talking, and, you know, the gameplay is like built around that, and there are situation modes that walk you through all these different ways you can work with your team, and there's a terrorist hunt mode that kind of like also encourages that kind of play. But at the events I played at, I was with people in the same room, and we could talk to each other, and we were all kind of like in it to win it and not
in the shit.
Yeah, yeah. So we could talk to each other and form plans, and it was easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Is that how that goes?
It is.
Yes. I did it.
You said you had a pretty good team experience.
Yeah, yeah. Our team was at the review event. We got to play like 6 or 7 hours of mostly the multiplayer. And, you know, everyone at the beginning we had, it was kind of 50-50 because we were still learning. But after a while, we were just like on point. I think, yeah, there was some GameSpot guy, like IGN, Ryan McCaffrey, I think his name is. I don't know. But really smart guys.
Are you calling someone out right
now?
No,
those guys, those are my...
this is your squad.
I carry them with me every day.
do you have, like, his name tattooed on your back now? Or, like...
But, yeah, it's really, really interesting gameplay because it discourages the type of FPS gameplay I don't like, which is twitch-based kind of lone wolf. This is all about who can shoot who first.
I'm with you there. Yeah,
because I'll never
does nothing for me.
Yeah, I'll never be that good at twitch shooters. It's a game that requires you to think together, form a plan. Well, first of all, as a team, try and think what the defenders, for example, are going to be doing. Because you're like, you can. Well, last time they did this. They're going to be in this room if you scope them out, maybe, you know, with the drones. They're probably going to barricade these walls, lay traps here, because that's what we like to do and kind of do. And so let's come from this angle and, you know, I'll be this character so I can disable their electronics. I'll be this guy that can, like, breach a wall that shoots grenades through it to distract them. And, you know, you guys come from the windows. And you can do some really cool action movie stuff. And it's the shit when it works.
But can you do that in solo queue online with randos?
That's the problem. again, it's hard to fault the game for that. But I've had a really hard time with since the game launched, which is like last night officially, having that same kind of experience with strangers. And I think it's maybe because people are still learning what this game is about and kind of how to play it. You know, they've played a first-person shooter before, and their instinct is, well, shoot the bad guy, and that's how you win. In this game, no, you, like, literally will lose almost no matter what, unless the other team is doing the same thing, just, you know, running around willy-nilly, unless you talk to each other in some way and form a plan of some kind.
You have pretty limited time constraints for most matches, right? Is it like 5 minutes or something?
Off the top of my head, I think it's somewhere like 5 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that. You have to form a plan quick and then execute quick. Like,
but a match isn't just that time. It's like rounds, right?
Yeah, there's
CSGO style.
In casual mode, I think there's 4 rounds. And, you know, it's best of, and there's a tiebreaker if it comes to that. In ranked mode, it's like 6 or 7. And they take away the HUD or some elements of the HUD, grenade indicators, and so on. So it's really hardcore. So overall, I think it's a game that it's very, very well thought out. There are, you know, so many options for tackling, like, an objective and infiltrating these levels because certain surfaces can be destroyed by certain things. And it's just like... It's very overwhelming at first. And once you wrap your head around all of that and kind of think about what you can do, it becomes a very fun psychological game more than just a shooter.
Is playing defense as satisfying?
Oh, yeah. Because you maybe hold up in your room. Here's this small example. Typically, your objective is in one room, and your first instinct is like, okay, we're going to lock this room down and kind of hunker down and chill in here. And we were doing that for a long time on certain maps, and it was working 50-50, right? Because it's predictable. Like, you're in the room. Well, they might have barricades here. They might have traps here. We'll just go to where they're not. It kind of devolved into just this one final shootout. We eventually started thinking, well, they're going to think we're going to be hunkering down, so maybe we, barricade this room up like we would normally, but then kind of spread out around the perimeter of the room they're going to be attacking, wait for them to go inside, and then trap them and shoot them like fish in a barrel. So that was like one step of our psychological battle. They started catching on to us doing that, and then it became just, you know, it's this back and forth of seeing what people do. how you use the tools in creative ways, how you use the maps in creative ways. And I'm still, like, finding new ways to do that. The problem is just finding people who want to do that with you and think about the game in that way. So I like it a lot. I really, really do. Are people going to want to drop, you know, I hate to bring, you know, value into a game, but it's, you know, people spend money on these things. Are people going to want to spend $60 on a multiplayer-only shooter that requires, like, you know, a pretty optimal setup between friends in order to really,
really
enjoy?
Want a squad, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's certainly going to be a crowd of people who get into this game. At least
the,
I hope
the
so.
The Evan Lotties of the world.
Yeah, I hope so, because I think this game, like, has a lot of room for growth, and they're going to support it with free maps and free operators and so on. They've pledged to doing that.
Yeah, they said all of the DLC maps are going to be free.
It's all going to be free. You can get it sooner if you get the season pass, and that's like...
But I want to, real quickly, I want to jump back to that question you just asked of, are people going to be willing to pay for this multiplayer-only shooter? Because this is a question that I've heard so many times lately, because Siege doesn't have a single player. Battlefront doesn't have a single player, really. It's got mission modes, but it doesn't have a campaign or anything. Overwatch isn't going to have a single player. There's... It's slowly becoming the trend. It's slowly becoming the norm that these multiplayer competitive shooters don't have single player modes, or at least their single player modes are more kind of just like gimmicky distractions rather than a campaign. I feel like people are this is the time to speak with your wallet, right? And we keep asking this question of, are people going to be okay with this? And I think so far, yes, they are. But after this year, we will really see whether these games are failing or doing worse because of a lack of campaign. Personally, I miss campaigns. One of my favorite parts about Rainbow Six Vegas 2 was the campaign. But
yeah, I mean, I have a hard time with that question because when I'm writing a review for a game like this, I don't think about the value proposition at all. Like,
right.
I can't. That's and I don't think that this game needs a campaign, period. I don't think it's worse because it doesn't have one. It would be nice to have one, I guess, but it certainly doesn't need it. So I don't know. Like, I don't think, like, anyone's being shortchanged. I think it's worth $60, 100% worth $60. It's just a matter of, like, the way people understand or think about games as what kind of content is in them. Like, people want modes and maps, and that somehow equates to value. Whereas I think in Rainbow Six, the variability in the gameplay equates, like, to value to me.
You're talking about craft versus the number of things in the bucket.
Yeah. It's like...
And for some people, if the bucket doesn't have enough stuff in it or certain things in it, they don't want that bucket.
Yeah, and I don't know. That kind of irks me personally because I think this game is... it's very, very, very well done. And I think it deserves, you know, to be paid for and, like, appreciated as, you know, next to any full-fledged single-player campaign. I don't think anyone's being shortchanged. And I don't know, I just want the conversation to change from, like, number of maps and campaigns and so on to, is it fun? And, you know, am I going to spend a lot of time in this?
And not only is it fun, but, yeah, that second part is key, where is it going to hold my attention and continue to be fun 30 hours into it? Because multiplayer shooters, to a certain extent, should last you potentially indefinitely. To a certain extent, they're similar to open world games like that. Of if you do them right, you'll never want to stop playing it.
Well, and at some point, the number of things does kind of dovetail into how much fun it is. You know, like number of maps does matter. You can see in MOBAs the way one finely crafted map can kind of take the form of a field the way it does, you know, in sports. The map is just there for you to perform all these other layers of action on. I think FPS maps are generally different in that form, in that I've played thousands of hours of FPS games, and when I was into a new one and playing it, you know, day in, day out, playing the same map 10 times in a day would get old sometimes.
Yeah.
And
they get stale quicker.
It didn't mean that I didn't still like that map and
right.
didn't want to play on it again a week from then, but I didn't want to go through a rotation of I'm playing CTF for 2 hours and an hour and a half of that is spent playing the same map. Like, I want that variety that affects the tactics you use to approach the map and you know, all the weapons that are available on that map or the way you use weapons and different approaches to things. And FPS games, I think these days, generally go for more detailed maps over variety of maps. Mm-hmm. And I do often miss the Unreal Tournament 2004 days where the game just comes with, I don't know, 60 maps or something, you know, ridiculous like that. And I don't expect that out of a modern game, but I do right. think there has been a bad tendency of putting out a shooter with 6 or 8 maps and then selling you a season pass for $30 and charging a lot of money
right.
for the rest of those maps.
Yeah. And I think Rainbow Six gets by on that count because each map feels so dense and different. There's like 10, I believe.
And they're giving you more for free.
So I think, you know, if you do look at the game like from a value of or perspective of variety of maps and that's something you're looking for, I mean, this game could come with 5 maps and I wouldn't know the difference because I just like each of them so much. And I think there's a lot to each of them. But you're getting 10 with a day and night variant and more in the future for free. So, I mean, to me, it... totally worth it.
Well, we can read your entire review.
Yeah.
Right now, you're...
Soon.
Yes, very soon.
Two
your
days,
review
maybe.
In progress is already
Two
up days. On PCGamer.com, but James will have his full review later this week, imminently, I would almost say. But let's have some fun now. Let's do Cat Fantastic.
Oh,
we're going to bring Cat Fantastic back.
Oh, boy.
I am so excited about
it's
this.
It's been a few months.
It's been
yeah.
months. If you're a new listener of the show, Cat Fantastic is our weekly, or usually weekly, quiz. Unfortunately, with the office move and all that sort of stuff, we just haven't been able to do it. I'm going to be trying to bring it back as a weekly thing. No promises, though, because I'm not that funny sometimes. but this week we have...
We'll rope Chris Livingston in to,
yes.
to write some more quizzes.
Chris writes the best ones. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's so good. Anyway, we have an audio quiz this week. So
oh, gosh.
This was actually a quiz that I made for a show... months ago, before we stopped doing Cat Fantastic, and it was more of an RPG themed show. So now this has no relevance to today's show, but it is going to be fun anyway. So James, don't look at my computer screen because you'll be cheating otherwise, and everyone in Twitch chat will know, and you will be sanctioned as such. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play an audio clip, and you're going to have to tell me what game you just leveled up in.
Oh man.
So that is the goal of this one.
I might be really bad at this.
Now, this one is either going to be really easy or really hard, and I think it'll be a case-by-case basis.
RPGs.
Are these all PC?
They're all PC.
Okay.
Everyone listening and watching at home, play along as well. If you are in Twitch chat, let us know what you think it is. Here's the first one. And like I said, some of these are hard, some of these are easy.
Can you just throw in the Zelda item sound just so I can get one?
Yeah. No, you'll definitely get at least one. I can promise you that.
Then I probably know what it is already.
Okay. Let's go ahead.
Oh, I know this one.
Yeah, that sounds really familiar.
Oh, my God.
And I can do it a second time if you'd like.
Definitely.
One more.
I'm going to be sad when I don't get this. Is that... No. It's not Diablo, is it? Damn, no.
James looks so distraught.
I know
right
this.
Now.
I've heard this hundreds of times, potentially.
Twitch chat has figured it out, by the way.
I'm sure.
Guild Wars? No.
This was supposed to be the easy one, guys.
What is it?
Even Chris knows it.
Even Chris knows. Wow, insulting.
I know.
I'm going to go with, for every answer I don't know, Jade Empire.
Let me put it this way. Chris has played a lot of this game, so he would know it.
Oh, it's Skyrim! Oh! There it is!
So, I haven't played Skyrim.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I waited until the mod scene was fully developed, and then I decided I didn't really want to play it.
Oh, Chris, I had heard that hundreds
Chris
of times.
Chris in the chat said, come on, James, in all caps, and then boo when I gave you a hint. So, good job. You did get it. So let's move on. This one I think no one is going to get. Some people in Twitch chat might get, but...
That...
I'm not going to lie. This one's
definitely
mean.
Jade Empire. No. That's a kind of a shitty sound effect.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Some of the audio quality is a little low.
What was that? I don't know if it ever came out on PC. What was that JRPG where you're like inside the mind of Beethoven?
What?
Whatever. You know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea.
Like
that's
seriously, that's a thing. It's musical themed, and you're inside some dying composer's mind or something. That game. Whatever.
No, that is a good guess, I think.
Jade Empire.
That one was, and only some people will know this, but that was a game called Maple Story.
I knew it was a JRPG.
That sounds like a Maple Story.
It's actually,
sound.
I think, was originally a Korean RPG. It's this MMO. Yeah. I think it's either Korean or Japanese. I'm not sure. And it came to the States a long time ago, and they are making a sequel, or have made a sequel. That was a game I played way too much of in high school. So
I almost guessed that Wrecketeer, the item shop game. I don't know if that's an
RPG. Oh yeah, that would have been a good guess as well. Okay, we can.
Someone in chat, tell me the name of that JRPG that I was talking about. It maybe never came out on PC. It was on the Xbox 360.
Eternal Sonata.
That was it. Yeah,
that's what the
takes
chat
place
said.
In Beethoven's mind.
I think so. Something like that.
I want to play that now.
Apparently, it was not good. No.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's move on.
Fine.
Oh, yeah, that's easy.
James got that one quick, so don't hold it in.
I don't know. Okay, I may not know specifically.
But we'll do it one more time. One more time.
Don't think I know it.
Is it
James?
Is it Fallout? Is it 3 or New Vegas?
It's 3.
3?
So good job. Okay. Yes. So far, James is 2 for 3 here.
Sort of. Skyrim doesn't count. I should have known that.
But you got it, though. It counts. Yeah. It counts. Yes, that was Fallout 3 specifically. And at the time I made this quiz, Fallout 4 hadn't come out yet.
You know, I've probably played 150 to 200 hours of Fallout 3 and remember no audio from that game except like the sound that the laser guns made. That's like the only sound that has stuck with me. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
That one's aggressive.
Yeah, it's probably the most horrible one in this one.
That's discouraging.
It sounds like a late 90s sound effect.
Yeah. Well,
I'll give you a slight clue and say that it was really, really impossibly hard to find any old game sound effects. Mm-hmm. So most of the games are not super old.
Can you give us a first letter?
You'll probably immediately get it if I give you the first letter.
I don't know.
Is that a letter?
I was just thinking James looks like he's like got something just right on the tip, but nope. All right, I'm going to give you guys this one. Has the chat figured it out yet? Let's see. It looks like nobody in the chat has actually figured this one out yet, or at least said it. That one is Diablo 3.
Okay. I was going to guess Diablo.
The Diablo 3.
I wouldn't have guessed 3 because that sounded kind of shitty, honestly.
Yeah, well, the sound quality is just really
okay,
bad.
Okay, the quality might have been, yeah. Because I've heard.
I would have guessed Diablo 1 if you hadn't said that it wasn't. Well, it wasn't newer.
Yeah. So that one's it's kind of crappy audio quality. So if you didn't get that one and you played a lot of Diablo 3, that's why. Also, usually when you level up, there's like other noises going on and there's things dying. And
it's true. And the UI goes psh.
Now we'll do our second to last one.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
I knew it was going to be Witcher 3.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, man, you got that one so quick.
When you said there was one I would know, like that's the only game I've really talked about playing to any length this year. So yeah. It's pretty obvious.
I wanted to, I really, so originally, this actually was the, I, the game that made me think of doing this. And originally I wanted to do quest complete sounds just so I could get that woman shrieking. I just wanted that like high-pitched shriek of that woman, but it was really, really hard to find quest complete sounds. So we switched over to level up sounds. We'll play the Witcher 3 one more time just so you
like it.
It's short and sweet, to the point. And then finally, we have this.
Oh,
I figured this was a good one to end on.
Is that WoW?
Is that your guess?
It's been a while.
I'm going to do it one more time.
That sound effect... sounds I've like it would fit in an old Infinity Engine game, no problem. So if it's not an old game, then yeah, I got. Oh, is it Divinity? I don't remember the sound effects in Divinity, so I'll guess Divinity or Jade Empire. Divinity Original Sin.
None of them are Jade Empire.
Dragon Age. Oh shit!
Jade Empire is free today.
That was actually indeed World of Warcraft. James got it on the first try.
And I played a little WoW 10 years ago.
Yeah,
me
it's been
too.
A while.
Well, that I'm glad we did that. I'm glad we brought back Cat Fantastic. That was maybe a little bit of a more punishing one than I imagined.
Better for the viewers than for us.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We don't need to know the answers if you guys do. So I hope you enjoyed that. Hopefully we'll be back again with another Cat Fantastic next week. I am going to try my darndest to be funny and probably then not be funny and enlist Chris Livingston to be funny.
We should make a Coconut Monkey themed Cat Fantastic.
Based on all the old demo discs?
Off his old demo discs and appearances and... in various weird places that...
Well, I hope everyone did well. We're going to move right along. I want to talk a little bit, and we can talk about this just briefly, but I want to talk about console to PC streaming. And what that means is, for those of you who don't know, they just announced... Or Xbox One, you could always stream your Xbox One to your PC. So
well, not always.
Or for a while. 10.
For a while, yeah.
For a while. If you have Windows 10, you can stream Xbox One to Windows 10. And now, very recently, just last week, Sony announced that they will be providing official support to do that with your PS4 to Windows.
Mm-hmm. Which they announced about a day or two after this guy, programmer, app developer, revealed that he had been working on a third-party way to, I guess, kind of trick the remote play system on the PS4 to stream to a PC instead of to a Vita. Which is actually something you can do now. He put his app out. It's kind of like in a limited alpha release that you kind of have to dig through his forum to find, but it's out there.
Yep. Well, that's cool. But it's kind of unfortunate that he got undercut by Sony immediately, but...
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what theirs can do.
So I don't want to talk specifically about the wonders of console streaming as much as... I have a very simple question, Wes, because you've done... this. You've talked before that you played Halo 5 on streaming to your PC.
I have.
My question is, why? Like, I just fundamentally don't understand the appeal or who this is marketed towards or what the reasoning of wanting to stream to a PC is from your console.
I think it's a fairly limited appeal. Mm-hmm. I mean, for some people, there's zero reason to do it. If, for example, your gaming setup is... one singular entity where you have all your consoles and your PC plugged into the same big monitor or TV, there's no point. There's no reason. You're just getting a worse, a shittier experience on your PC than you would otherwise. I think one of our posters just fell down here.
It'll survive.
Nice save.
So for some people, there's no reason to do it. For other people, could have a lot of reasons. I liked it because... I feel like generally when I play shooters, I do better if I'm playing on a smaller screen, but not a tiny screen, but a screen that's small enough to kind of have the entire thing in my field of vision easily and be closer to the screen than playing on a large TV that I'm sitting further away from. I think my reaction time is generally just a little bit better. It's easier for me to pick up on, you know, enemies in the distance, that sort of thing. So that was kind of my main interest in playing Halo that way, is to be able to play on my 27-inch monitor at my desk instead of like a 65-inch TV that I'm sitting across the living room from. For some people, if you're living in a shared space or you're 16 and your parents watch TV at night and kick you off the Xbox, then you could just turn the Xbox on and have it running, streaming to your, you know, your bedroom where your PC is, something like that. But yeah, it's kind of a limited use case thing. I think for Microsoft, it was partially, it was technology that they could do and say, hey, we're supporting the PC. You can play all these Xbox games. Look at our vibrant ecosystem and how these things work together. So it was good PR for them. And it's a feature that a lot of people aren't going to care about, but a few people will. And it works reasonably well. So I think the, I think it's a, you know, it's a niche use case, but it's kind of cool.
And you think it was Sony just kind of trying to say anything you can do, I can do better, or I can do the same?
Yeah, I would say so. The interesting thing is the unofficial app that this guy's put out for remote play right now, you can do remote play over the internet, which is something you can do from your PlayStation to your Vita. You can do that to your PC now. So your PlayStation 4 at home could be running and stream a game to your laptop in another state or something like that. I think the performance is probably not great at this point, and I don't know if it would ever be great.
Yeah,
definitely wouldn't be something you'd want to play a competitive shooter game or, you know, Rocket League or something that way. But it is functional. It does work, and if Sony's implementation is really good, that could be pretty cool. You know, if you could have, you know, a JRPG or something that's a portable, a game that you kind of want to be able to play anywhere that's a big time sink, being able to start that up at home, go on a trip, and just load up your save remotely, that's pretty cool. Like, I'd enjoy being able to play a game on my laptop remotely away from home. So I think that's actually a better use case than streaming inside your own house from your console to your PC, because clearly the potential is there for you to just move one thing to the other place and then be done.
You don't want to do that.
Yeah, but I don't know if their performance is ever going to be great.
Who would have that much motivation to do anything?
Moving
like that?
Stuff is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. I used to move my PC to my TV a lot, and then I got a new case that doesn't have handles, and now I've been using it less on my TV. So I have to look into a Steam Link
50-foot Ethernet cord HDMI cord. Sorry,
the 50-foot HDMI I might not be able to afford. I have the 50-foot Ethernet though. Well, okay, thank you. We don't have to dwell on this too long. We don't have to talk about it too much. I just wanted to, like, clarify for maybe some listeners at home as well, because I just didn't understand it. But that the explanation of maybe playing something cross-country or something like that is interesting.
I'm curious if anybody in the chat uses it, either the Xbox One or has messed around with the new PS4 one. I think it's very few people are using that one right now because, one, you have to pay money for it. Two, it's an alpha. Three, it's from an unofficial developer. So kind of limited reach at the moment.
Right. Well, we can move right along and we can start talking about Just Cause 3. So none of us have physically played Just Cause 3. I have watched a bunch of it, but we just put out a review yesterday and it just came out today, just like Siege. Well, there is controversy and there isn't. And basically, I wanted to continue our conversation a little bit from last week where we talked about open world games, because what ended up happening this week is that there's been a lot of negative feedback towards Just Cause 3 for basically being a sandbox that is repetitive and there's not a huge amount of stuff to do in it. But the thing to me, and the thing a lot of people have been pointing out, is that that's not really different than Just Cause 2. Phil Savage, who reviewed it for our sister site Games Radar, and of course is an editor here at PC Gamer, he pointed out that the pacing of Just Cause 3 kind of forces you into a more repetitive way of playing than Just Cause 2 did, but it's still just, it's sandbox, and I feel like what maybe is happening is that the attitude towards what an open world game can be has changed over the last year, like we talked about last week. And now when you're given a sandbox game where really the point of it is just blow stuff up and have fun in it, and that's what you should expect out of it, people come away a little bit disappointed that there wasn't more, because we have these sandbox games that are like Metal Gear Solid 5 and The Witcher that are just so detailed and so deep that a sandbox is kind of not enough anymore. I mean, do you guys disagree with that? That's just my opinion.
Well, I know James didn't like Just Cause 2. I had a lot of fun playing that game. I guess I never played – actually, I can't remember if I played the campaign. I think I played through some of the story. I would mostly just go in it and mess around, and I enjoyed it a lot. But I kind of wonder now if – and I haven't played Just Cause 3, so I don't know kind of the degree to which you can destroy things.
A lot.
but I loved Red Faction –
Yeah, me too.
Not Armageddon. The
Guerrilla.
Guerrilla. Red Faction Guerrilla was a really fun game. And the fact that you could just destroy every building in the environment was really satisfying.
Yeah.
And endlessly entertaining for me for the 20, 30 hours I played that game. And Just Cause 2 didn't have that. You could blow up a lot of explosive, you know, tanks and, you know, barrels and all that kind of stuff. You couldn't just, like, destroy all kinds of buildings. So that was – that's something that I think would give your sandbox more longevity, and especially if you look at how many indie games these days are using interesting, like, voxel engines to just be like, oh, yeah, all of this terrain is deformable, mm-hmm. destructible. Mm-hmm. It's hard to kind of – go back to having this giant world that is both empty and isn't destructible.
Yeah.
If your game is entirely about blowing shit up and have that not feel kind of empty.
And for the record, real quick, anybody who is excited for or anticipating Just Cause 3, I don't mean to discourage you in that excitement. If you really enjoy sandbox games like that and love blowing stuff up and running around the world, then more power to you. Seriously, enjoy the games you want to, the way you want to play them. It's just, I've lost patience for that sort of thing a little bit. I mean, I remember, and I didn't mean to cut you off,
no,
James.
No, go for it.
But I remember actually a game that I really enjoyed a while ago was Mercenaries 2.
Really?
Yeah.
You're the only one. That game was a mess.
I know. But I loved the first one. And I liked the second one for the fact that you could just kind of go around and blow up buildings. And so I'm interested in how much more – because I'm going to be playing Just Cause 3 tonight. And I'm interested to see how much it'll hold my attention now, because I liked blowing up buildings like that, but I never played Just Cause 2. So maybe I will not have that context of already having had the experience before. I don't know.
The physics stuff in Just Cause 2 also is really fun. Just – being able to, you know, to not bungee cord, what's the name of the – just attach your car to the ground and see
tether.
See it do a bunch of flips, or attach a guy to a rocket and then shoot it and have it just drag him up in the air. Like, the physics fun of that game was really good, but it's also a really, really large open world that you can – you could kind of just – drive your car off a cliff and end up, you know, in the jungle, and then have to hoof it over to civilization before you can kind of, enter the playground again.
Right.
So I think that is a problem where people are realizing, especially after GTA 5, just like the density of the open world, if it's kind of in that, if you're in that sandbox vein. I think The Witcher is kind of a different game because it's so much more about narrative. But if it's mostly about just going in and messing around, the level of detail in that world and the density matters way more than the size now.
Yeah. So,
well, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that last week I said Just Cause would probably be better off taking place in a giant white box with all the tools there or something like that. Like, and Andy said it in his review. It's like, well, there's a mountain in the distance, but going there doesn't really mean anything other than, like, you can fall off it, or you can, fly a plane off it, or, you know, ride a bus down it. That's fun, sure, but, like, the things that gate you in, prevent you from doing that are things like the story and the progression and all that stuff. If it's going to be, a true sandbox and it wants you to do these interesting things, it feels weird to see it
gated by space, you know, like, and the, you know, if the density of the world doesn't, bolster the things you like to be doing or encourage creativity, and if the progression, like, you know, unlocking bases and like grinding to get experience to unlock certain weapons, I don't know. But Just Cause 2, I think, was not actually received very well initially because it's not like a good game on its own. But it's good because people just started dinking around with it on PC and making stuff for it and, you know, skipping the story and playing with physics and, you know, spawning in buses where, you know, in 20s.
I know nothing of Just Cause 2 except for tethering planes to other planes and stuff like that. Like, that's how I know that game.
Well, I think it was fairly well received when it came out, but part of that was awe at the size of the world. Which is not a thing that metric kind of died with Just Cause 2 and with that era of games, open world games. I mean, GTA 5 is smaller than San Andreas, right? I think every GTA game
and it still feels
since
big.
Then has been smaller than San Andreas. And I didn't finish GTA 5, the story. I played a good chunk of it. And I did really enjoy some parts where I was just driving from the country to the city. If I had done that 50 times, probably wouldn't have enjoyed it too much. But and some people probably hated it the first time. They were like, I'm spending 5-10 minutes driving through kind of nothing just to get from one place to another. I'm bored of that. I don't want to do that. You know, I need more entertainment minute to minute. So that's definitely a problem to overcome for big open world games.
Yeah, it's and Andy wrote a piece today as a follow-up to his review yesterday all about how size isn't everything in open world games, which, I mean, why did we not call that size doesn't matter or something like that? I don't know. But he brought up the points very similarly of it kind of doesn't matter how big you make the world. In fact, making it too big can be a detriment as long as the systems that are in it are interesting and they're working together and there's things to do and you like the world. Whereas if you just make this giant island map where a mountain, all that is on a mountain is a like higher point to stand, you know, then that mountain loses a lot of its value and a lot of its entertainment to a player.
So I think it is worth pointing out, you know, we try to think critically about these things and thoughtfully and you know, put a lot of effort into explaining why we think these things about games and trends in gaming. But we also, in general, I'm kind of just talking about people who review games or whatever, we play many more of these big tentpole games than the average person does, potentially. So if you didn't play The Witcher 3 and you didn't play Grand Theft Auto 5 and you didn't play Metal Gear Solid and you've been excited about Just Cause all year, you're having a very different experience than people who've played all of these games. So some people look at that fatigue and go like, oh, they're just burnt out on it, you know, screw their opinion. You can think that if you want, but just keep in mind, like, if we're playing all these games and we're evaluating them on the scope of what's happened in games the past year or whatever, we have this wide perspective, but that does come with kind of realizing what we like and don't like about these games and what parts of them are kind of tired if you're experiencing lots of them. And if you're not experiencing lots of them and you buy three games a year and you just want a really fun physics sandbox, you're going to love Just Cause 3, you know, unless it has technical issues for you and other problems.
But. And speaking of technical issues, ironically, and for the first time all year, it sounds like the PC version doesn't have too many technical issues and the console versions are a mess.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting cathartic flip for me, at least, where I'm just like, ha-ha, this happened to you, finally. We didn't have to put up with a terrible release.
Yeah. Pay attention, Batman developers.
Yeah. Apparently there's been some problems here and there with, like, if you haven't upgraded your drivers, there's issues, but, like, most of them have been sorted on PC, whereas you have to be connected to the Ubisoft servers, I guess, not Ubisoft, Square Enix servers to connect, to load the next area of the game in Just Cause. So what'll end up happening, since the servers are so overloaded on launch day, is that consoles will have like 15-minute load times. Like, not exaggerating. People have had up to 15-minute load times because they're, like, connecting to the server and it's taking so long. So, and then also there were reports that Xbox One dropped to something like 20 frames per second at points.
It was worse than that, yeah.
It's just, it's really unfortunate. Like, we don't like seeing bad launches for any platform, but it's also kind of this oddly cathartic moment to see the shoe on the other foot for once.
You're a sick man.
It brings up an interesting point, performance comparison between consoles and PC that is only going to get more and more dramatic over time. And, you know, for a long time, and it kind of still currently, the metric for consoles, like storage, was a big weak point versus PC. Like, your Xbox comes with 500 gigs of storage, but you have to install every game, and that's like 30 to 50 gigs per game. That fills up pretty quick. And the read speeds on those hard drives suck compared to an SSD by a pretty dramatic margin. And if the next generation of consoles don't have SSDs in them, that's
bad.
That's gonna really suck, because PCs by that point are gonna be on all PCIe SSDs that can read at like 2,000 megabytes a second or better. And if the consoles are still on hard drives, like, that's gonna be real sad.
The future. Did you see that somebody is making like 128 gig sticks of RAM now?
It's a big stick of RAM.
They're terrible. They're for, like, they're incredibly slow, and they're for, like, server farms, essentially. But it's happening. You know, that's not too far off where they'll make that actually usably DDR8. Fast. It's seriously slow, though. It's like a hundredth of the speed or something like that of RAM right now. Like, very, very, very slow. Let's move on to our Twitch chat Q&A. If you have any questions for us, please tag us with @PCGamer in the Twitch chat, and we will see your questions. If you'd like to ask questions and you're listening on the podcast or on YouTube right now, just come to twitch.tv/PCGamer at 1 p.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays, and you will be able to join along and ask your questions to us about whatever's on your mind of PC gaming. But while we're waiting for questions to come in, I think Wes wants to share
something. I
have
a really, really important news story, dear to my heart. Maybe the most important news in PC gaming all year, which is a new version of Dwarf Fortress has been released today. And at least I think it is available to download, or it is out imminently.
And while we're talking about this, can we please pull up the Dwarf Fortress site?
Oh, there it is.
It's beautiful.
So the new version they've been working on all year, lots of bug fixes as well as tons of new features, which you can expect out of a Dwarf Fortress update. If you're not familiar with Dwarf Fortress, it's almost indescribable. I don't know. It is a simulation deeper, I think, fair to say, than any other video game that has ever been created by a substantial margin. It's incredibly difficult to play because the user interface is draconian and incredibly complex, and there are so many systems at play. But there's some really fun patch notes in here that talk about the new updates and some of these are just, I don't know, they get to the core of the experience of Dwarf Fortress. Like, the fact that you can now make paper, and this is a whole new system in the game. There are three forms of writing materials: papyrus sheets, paper sheets, and parchment sheets. Papyrus sheets are made directly from the plant at the farmer's workshop. Paper is made from pressed slurries, so you have to start at a mill, then go to a screw press. Whoa. Parchment is made from hide and milk of lime at the tanners. Bake.
Oh my God.
Bake quicklime at a kiln, then make milk of lime at an ashery. So this is like several different workstations you have to have in your fortress with dwarves trained to use them. That is a thing.
It's beautiful.
My favorite line in the update is, "Children play with toys now, and they can also play make-believe."
PC gaming.
And these are, for the record, a child looks like an ASCII symbol, right? This is all very cryptic.
If you're playing on the original graphics, yeah.
Okay. My friend
It is all ASCII, but there are graphics mods and stuff if you want to use them.
A friend of mine once described Dwarf Fortress as the best game ever made, wrapped in the worst UI ever made.
Yeah, I don't know if the UI – I think it's fair to say the UI is bad. I don't know how to make it better.
Right.
I'm not a designer. There are so many layers of things you can do in that game.
It doesn't necessarily inhibit you from enjoying the game to its fullest. Mm. It's just that it takes a lot to learn.
It's a massive barrier of entry, for sure. There's one other thing I wanted to say about – oh, yeah. If you ever saw the YouTube video series that I did with Will Chesney, who's a video producer here, we did like 50 episodes of playing Dwarf Fortress, and it was kind of him teaching me how to play because he's been a Dwarf Fortress fan for years. And at one point in our playthrough, we did accidentally murder a baby, and it was – quite a dramatic moment for us. Dang, that I still think about. Yeah,
that's not cool.
It was.
You see that little
effort? It was for a good cause. The dwarves. The dwarves were learning. They were practicing combat, and we had built a combat room for them to fight in that had like wooden spears that would attack them. But those won't hurt. It was training spears. Those won't hurt full-grown dwarves, but they will hurt animals and babies. And we accidentally sent a dwarf to train who had a child, and the child followed her into the training room and was speared to death.
That's horrible.
It was. We were very upset.
Dwarf Fortress doesn't fuck about.
That's Dwarf Fortress. Yeah.
Oh my god. So let's take some questions. Let's see. Ian Animator asks, favorite deals from the fall sale? I'm not sure if that means specifically.
I own too many games on Steam now.
Yeah, I mean the Black Friday in general. I think there were some good sales. I loved seeing the Blue Yeti mic go down to like $75.
That's not a video game.
I figured he meant just Black Friday in general. Mm. Was there anything you guys bought or
I bought
jumped
a
on?
Friend a copy of Endless Legend, the 4X strategy game, because he likes Civ a lot and I really like Endless Legend, and it was like $10, so I was like, yeah, you should play this. And I saw Lethal League was on sale, as I mentioned. Yeah. I really like that game. But yeah, I have so many games at this point that I wasn't looking to buy anything right now.
Same.
Heavy Metal Finland asks, which is a great name as well, asks, most esports games have very rigid mechanics. You can count on everything happening in the same way every time. Do you think we will see esports games with physics-based mechanics or any kind of dynamic elements such as randomly generated maps in the future? I think potentially yes. I think that's definitely not, like, impossible, but it would take a lot of refining, and you would really need it to be play tested a lot, basically. So I think yes, but maybe the company that is willing to take that risk and can afford to take that risk is not the company that can make a successful esport also. I don't know.
You know, it's interesting to look at physical sports that often have very, I don't know if loose rules is the right way to describe it, but imprecise. For example, in football, the way you would kind of measure distance traveled and where the ball goes down and stuff, like you have some digital elements that have kind of been brought into the game to make it more precise, but it's still nowhere near the same way it is in a video game where everything is coded to precision and kind of inarguable whatever happened in a game.
They wouldn't even let umpires review plays in baseball until like 2 years ago.
Yeah, so you're talking about a question that would kind of require you to design a game in a way to intentionally make it less rigid or less accurate, which I think kind of sounds like anathema to what a lot of people like about competitive games, is like how pinpoint precise measurable they are. But having said that, I think eventually something like that will... I think it's kind of inevitable that something will do something very different from the norm, and that will spark people's attention and become very popular. So, sure, I'll say it's possible.
Kunifu asks, is anyone in the office checking out the Elite Dangerous Horizons beta, which launched yesterday? I think
we've been talking about it.
Yeah, we've been talking about it a lot. The vibe I get is that everyone in the office is really excited about it and thinks it's very cool looking, but also none of us really play Elite Dangerous. It's such a hard game to get into that... I think it also just requires a lot of time, so I think none of us are really, like, deeply into it. So none of us have been playing it, but I'm looking forward to trying it. I think this is going to be my excuse to try to jump back into the game for a little bit.
Andy certainly played a lot of it
yeah.
back when it came out, and I think Chris Thurston played a lot of it as well.
Chris Livingston did, too, I think.
So I'd say it's safe bet somebody will.
Yeah, we'll definitely be talking about it. There are a lot of people who have, like Wes just said, have played it in the office that will be picking it back up. Blonde Bassist asks, do you believe Microsoft will release Halo games such as Master Chief Collection or Halo 5 on PC? I think Halo 5 is almost guaranteed they will not. Master Chief Collection,
I don't know.
Maybe.
Why?
Because it's their baby. I mean, maybe, I guess there was that quote about, like, maybe it would come back, but or maybe it would come to PC, but I just feel like they wouldn't do that.
I think you're going to, I don't, maybe not with Halo 5, but I think you're going to see a trend with a lot of, at least, Xbox exclusives
coming to PC.
Halo Master Chief Collection was such a mess.
Yeah,
so just unmitigated disaster that I kind of doubt they're going to port that to PC. Halo 5 I'm still a little hopeful for, especially because they want it to be a competitive game. I don't know if they really want it to be an e-sport necessarily. I don't know if they've explicitly said that, but they want it to be a competitive game, and the audience for that is just so much bigger on PC.
Yep.
So, I don't know. They want to sell consoles, but at some point they just want to keep those games alive and relevant, and I think it's still up in the air. I think it's possible, but I'm not holding my breath.
Let's see. We had a couple questions just about Steam Controller and Steam Link. We have a couple of reviews that Wes did on the site, and you can Google for that, just PC Gamer Steam Controller.
Yeah,
review.
I put them up as reviews in progress. I've been gone. I haven't really spent a lot more time with them. Part of the reason I wrote them as a review in progress and not a final scored thing is because I didn't think they were done. They felt like beta hardware still to me when I was testing them, or up to like the day they were explicitly launched. They were still putting out updates for them. They were adding new features to the Steam Controller that hadn't been there days before. I would not recommend buying them in the state they were last time I used them, which was about 2 weeks ago. I think they felt unfinished and had a lot of problems. But I was also kind of down on the controller in general, and a lot of people really like it. So I don't know. My feeling after using it for quite a few days was, yes, you can be more accurate than you can be with an analog stick, but it's rarely going to be better for a game that was designed for a controller than that controller is. And it's never going to be as good as a mouse. So if the trade-off of playing a game on your TV is worth you being less precise and slower than you would be at your desk with your mouse, then the controller's for you. I realized sitting there in my living room playing a lot of mouse-based games that I didn't enjoy sitting on my couch as much as I enjoyed being better at that game and more efficient and faster at that game. So I stopped.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll have, you know, maybe you'll have a chance to play more of it and get a feel for maybe other games and if you like it or not, or maybe I'll just give up on it. But I'm sure we will not be seeing the last of the Steam Controller.
No, I won't give up on it. And I do want to get some tips up for people who buy them, you know, before the end of the year to just get a better early experience with it, because you really do have to configure it individually for every game to get the most out of it, which is not a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Requires like a lot of time invested to really get a good control scheme that works for a game. But it is much better than the alternative of it just like not working.
Ashnod asked, What are the best three games of the year for each of you? But I think we're actually going to be talking about that coming up in future shows, where our Game of the Year awards are kind of ramping up. We're almost at that time of the year. It is December now, if anybody had not looked at a calendar today.
The Witcher.
Well, you might know Wes's. But yeah, so we'll have more information on that. Speaking of future shows, we will actually be having next week, Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific time, right here on twitch.tv/PCGamer. Tim Schafer will be joining us from Double Fine. So that'll be awesome. If you're a fan of Double Fine, please come and watch that show. But yes, that is all the time we have for today's show. Thank you very, very much for joining us. James and Wes, thank you as well. It's a pleasure as always. If you have any comments, questions, concerns about the show, once again, this is only our second show in the new office, in the new space with a new setup. So if you'd like to suggest anything or just want to send us well wishes or negative wishes, it's totally up to you.
Or a fan.
Or a fan, because it is warm in here. That has not been fixed since last week, by the way. We have a vent up there, but it kind of doesn't do anything. I think it's just for show.
It looks nice.
It does look nice, but it's not on camera, so there you go. But thank you very much, everyone, for watching. Once again, if you do have any questions, comments, concerns, you can post them in the YouTube comments on our YouTube page, youtube.com/PCGamer, or if you go to PCGamer.com/podcast, this will be the first link. You can click on today's show and leave us a comment there about whatever you would like. So thank you very much, and we will see you next week.